inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you on the program. This is another live edition of the show. Myself and Rick Green, we are your hosts each week on the program. Glad to be with you today. AFR.net is the URL, and if you want to subscribe to the podcast, wherever you listen to the podcast, just type in the name of the program, At the Core, and you can subscribe to the show and have it queued up in your podcast library each and every day. Let's turn our attention to the scripture and jump right into our content, because we sure do have a lot of content to cover today. Proverbs 1 is where we are this week. Just looking at verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and fools despise wisdom and instruction. That's Proverbs 1, verse 7. That's our scripture for the week. All right. Several events that we have coming up over the next, over the rest of the year, honestly, looking at June, October. We have the Activate Summit coming up in June, the 12th through the 14th. We have a weekend with AFA in October, the first week of October, October 2 through 4. And then lastly, we have our annual AFA at the Ark Encounter, October 30th and 31st, also in this year. So those three different events coming up over the next 6 to 8 months, and we would love for you to join us at any or all of those. Just simply go to afa.net/events, afa.net/events. That's the Activate Summit in June, the weekend with AFA in October, and also the AFA at the Ark trip in October as well. So three great opportunities to interact with American Family Association, to interact with some of our show hosts. We're going to have great speakers at each of those. afa.net/events is the one-stop shop place to find out all things about upcoming American Family Association events. Listener testimonies. We're wanting listener stories as we head close to our biannual Share-a-thon coming up in early April. We need your listener testimony. So if you've been impacted in a positive way by American Family Radio, if God has used AFR in your life, well, we want to hear your story. So you can call in, and your story might even be played live on American Family Radio during our Share-a-thon. So call 877-876-8893. That's the number to call in. Keep it about 1 or 2 minutes, your listener testimony, 877-876-8893. We'd love to hear from you and how God has used American Family Radio in your life. Well, in the few minutes we have left this segment, just to try to pack this in, you know, one thing I've been very kind of honed in on is these economic developments under Trump, because we saw how bad it was under Biden. And I just put out a 5-minute social media video over on my Facebook page and my X account, giving my thoughts on where we're headed. And if I told you that Biden had a 600% tariff on Vietnam mattress imports, would you believe me? Well, you probably wouldn't believe me, because the media and the Democrats couldn't politicize it to go after Trump, so they didn't talk about it. But Biden, in May of 2021, Biden's trade representatives recommended to him a 600% tariff on mattress dumping into the U.S. from Vietnam and other countries as well, not just Vietnam. Let's look at these numbers. 20% tariff on Turkey. This was under Biden. This has to do with basically mattress dumping in the U.S. 20% tariff on Turkey. That was a lot of T's there. 40% on Thailand. 40% on Malaysia. 50% on Cambodia. 100% on Serbia. 668% on Vietnam. All right. And domestic manufacturers in 2023 and 2024, they actually wanted Biden to go harder. They wanted him to go more on these tariffs on mattress dumping in the U.S. market. They wanted Biden to impose a 40% tariff on Mexico. Let's see, 200% on Bosnia, 250% on Italy, 330% on Poland, 500% on the Philippines, 600% on Taiwan, and 750% on Slovenia. So my point here, folks, is that tariffs are only scary when the media makes them scary. Okay, that's my point. Tariffs are only scary when the media makes them scary. Otherwise, it's a pretty common play by a president to utilize tariffs for a variety of purposes. Okay, all right. So that's my kind of rant on the tariffs. Also, Biden went pretty aggressive on Chinese tariffs when he was in office. He upped the electric vehicle tariff to 100%. He upped the tariff on solar panels to 50%, 25% on electric vehicle batteries, and critical minerals, and steel and aluminum. So the point being is that tariffs are a pretty common thing for administrations to deploy for a variety of reasons. Also, the long game. What is the long game? Which is needs to be part of the discussion. So we had trouble getting this clip yesterday because the website X was actually being attacked through a cyber attack. So we couldn't get the clip from there. So we brought it on today. And this is President Trump talking on Fox Business to Maria Bartiromo over the weekend about thinking about the long game, all right? And I've said this, I don't know how many times on this show, that we need to stop thinking about today or tomorrow, and we need to think broader when it comes to our approach to these very complicated and comprehensive issues in America. Let's listen to clip two.
I didn't buy any longer. Yeah, because there was nobody to call him. I used to call President Xi. I said, you got to do me a favor. You got to, you know, live up to that agreement. And he was great. He did.
Before you came into the Oval Office the first time, you were a very successful businessman, very successful real estate executive. And a lot of people said, oh, this is the business president. This is it. He's watching the stock market. He knows all about, you know, he doesn't want the market to go down. And now we've got tariffs and the market has been going down.
All right. Well, there you have it. That's part of the clip. And it didn't capture what I wanted there. So that's probably my bad. But in one of these interactions with Maria Bartiromo on in this interview, President Trump made the point that, and it actually had to do with China. President Trump made the point that China thinks about things from a 100-year perspective, and the U.S. thinks about things from a quarterly perspective. All right, and it's kind of true, right? Because when you look at our stock market and our publicly traded company filings and you know, quarterly tax filings and things like that, a lot of what America does is on a monthly or quarterly basis, and we kind of get stuck in that mindset. How do we get a quick fix, right, to our problems? But President Trump made the point that, look, China's looking at things from a 50, 100-year perspective, and they're willing to go through some temporal difficulties in order to achieve the long-term 50 to 100-year goal. Now, one of the kind of elephants in the room on this subject is that we don't have a dictator, right? We don't have a quote-unquote, president like Xi that's in office for like 40 years or whatever. And so we have this changing political leadership in our country just because of how our system is set up, which is a good thing, right? Because we get to elect our leaders. And so there's that dynamic that's different about America and China, and I totally get that. But overall, President Trump's right that we do have such a short-term mindset when it comes to goals and objectives in our country that we've got to do better about thinking long-term. And when you consider that and you look at what President Trump is trying to do long-term on the economic side of things, it makes sense, right? It makes complete sense. And the tariffs, for example, and the manufacturing. President Trump knows long-term we've got to bring manufacturing back to this country. Long-term, we lost over, 90,000 factories over the last few decades. The numbers are just shocking. And when you ride around America's cities and our rural areas, you see this. When you see big, empty steel buildings that are rusted up and the grass is eye high, that's because those were factories that were shuttered because our leaders allowed those jobs to be shipped overseas. And sorting some of this out is going to take time. It's not going to be fixed overnight. It's not going to be fixed in a month. It's not going to be fixed in 6 months. This stuff takes time. But this all is part of a master plan, if it can be borne out, a master plan to position America in a manner of strength and stability and long-term longevity. But if we keep doing it the broken way that Washington, D.C. wants to do things, and that is irresponsible governing, wasteful spending, and short-sighted decisions. I mean, that pretty much defines Washington, D.C. Because they run up on an issue, and they don't want to fix the core root problem of the issue, so what do? They kick the can down the road, and they do whatever's politically expedient in the short term to achieve their self-interested objectives. All right, that's pretty much Washington, D.C. in a nutshell. And I didn't plan that. But that's pretty much Washington, D.C. in a nutshell. And when you look at the spending problem, the reason many of these leaders don't want to fix the bloated spending problem is, well, twofold. Number one, some of them, not all, are doing insider trading, de facto insider trading. They would say I'm not doing insider trading, but they're, when you look at the numbers, they're de facto doing insider trading, and so they're making a buck off of these government spending bills and kind of timing the market, but also, they don't want to have to answer hard questions. So when you reduce government spending and you have to lay people off, and our GDP temporarily takes a hit, they don't want to have to answer those politically hard questions about the decisions that they're making in Washington, D.C. So every day's a party in Washington. Nobody wants to make the tough decisions, and that is before President Trump showed up on the scene. And I was talking to somebody recently, and they were kind of the mindset that, look, let's give Trump some time, all right? We may not like the tariffs. We may not like the stock market instability, although it looks like it's leveled out pretty well. And mark my word, I've been wrong before, but I've also been right several times. I think the market's going to be hot under Trump. I think this correction over the last few days is long overdue. A lot of these tech stocks were way overvalued. I think this correction is overall good for the markets. And look, the short-term investors and a lot of the kind of the retail investors, they get scared at the headlines and pull their money out and you know, respond the emotional way. But these long-term investors like Warren Buffett and others, look, these guys are in it for the long haul. And they're about to buy back into this dip in the market. And they're about to make billions of dollars over the next few years under the Trump economy. So that's my projection. So everybody calm down. Don't freak out over the headlines. The President Trump and his team know exactly what they're doing. This is all going to sort itself out. Just give the man some time.
Have you wanted to take your family to Kentucky to visit the Creation Museum and the Ark Encounter, but just never took the time? Don't put it off any longer. Let 2025 be the year you check that off the list. In fact, you can make it an even more memorable trip when you join AFA at the Ark October 30th and 31st. On Thursday, you'll get transportation for a tour of the Creation Museum, and Friday will take you for a tour of the Ark Encounter. But that's just the beginning. Expand your knowledge of creation with a special dinner presentation on Thursday by Answers in Genesis astronomer Dr. Danny Faulkner. Friday, Dr. Georgia Purdom, Answers in Genesis Vice President of Educational Content, will help you dig deeper into the Bible. And Friday evening, enjoy dinner and a panel discussion with Tony Vitagliano, Walker Wildman, and Wesley Wildman, Vice Presidents of American Family Association. Visit afa.net/events today and click on AFA at the Ark. afa.net/events and click on AFA at the Ark.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us for this second segment of the program. Just putting a kind of a bow on the economy talk, which so mortgage rates have basically dropped every week since President Trump was sworn in over the last 6 weeks. So that's a pretty good news item to see those dropping, which needed to happen because the housing market effectively has been frozen nationally, with the exception of a few markets, been frozen as far as new purchases due to the high cost and the high rates combined. So seeing the rates come down is a good thing for those who want to refinance or get in their first-time home. The inflation numbers this morning came in under what was expected, so which is a good news item. Both core and CPI came in under what was projected, which is the first time since mid-2024 for that to happen. So President Trump's literally been in office 6 weeks, and February was the first full month of his administration, and inflation's already showing signs of coming down. Well, I do want to jump to our next guest, who's been a guest before on the program, Dr. George Barna, with Arizona Christian University and their research center there, to talk about their latest report, the 12 trends that will shape faith and culture in 2025. Dr. Barna, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me again. It's good to be with you.
Well, this looking through this report and the summary of it is a lot to cover here, and we'll just kind of pick these off one by one and cover as much as we can. But give us a little background here. I mean, you guys put out tons of reports every year. You're looking at all things basically worldview related in our country. But give us kind of a set this report up, this 12 trends report that you've recently put out in late January from Arizona Christian University.
Sure. You know, it was the beginning of the year. It's the middle of the third decade of the millennium. We thought, okay, let's step back, look at the big picture of everything that we see going on, looking at all the different studies we've been doing, but importantly, also looking back 30 years, you know, because I've been at this for a while. So the real value of being able to do research over the course of time is that instead of doing a single survey, which is like taking a picture, you freeze a moment in time, but when you ask the same questions of a representative sample of the population year after year after year after year, you put all of those snapshots together, and it's kind of like the old movies, you know, where you put your thumb across all the old pictures, and it gives you like a moving picture, almost a movie, of what's going on in our culture. And so that's what this report really does. It goes back to 1995, what I was finding out back then, and looks at, well, how have things changed? What's the trajectory that the nation appears to be on, both in terms of its faith, but also in terms of some other interesting or important cultural trends? And there were a lot more than the 12 that are in this report, but I put these 12 in here because I thought hopefully it'll get people thinking about what they're seeing, what they're sensing and experiencing in our culture, but also as followers of Christ, what can we do to change that trajectory if we don't like it? Because it's going to keep going the direction it's going in unless we intentionally and strategically do things to change it.
Well, the first thing that I came across in this report is one of the trends is titled what you described as reshaping God to our liking. And it talks about Americans basically shifting from a biblical characterization of God to one that's more worldly or one that's more man-centered, right, and kind of meets our needs instead of us adapting our lives to the biblical requirements that God outlines. That was pretty shocking, but not surprising, but just to see how Christianity in some regards is kind of being twisted and morphed into something unbiblical, really. Talk about that trend of reshaping God to our liking, that cultural trend.
Well, essentially what's happening is that more and more Americans are saying they don't believe God exists, or they're not sure if he exists, so they're not going to worry about it. They're going to move on with their life. Basically, what we're doing is we're throwing God off the throne, and we're having a seat. We think that we are the ones who dictate what happens in our world and shape everything that happens in our lives. And so if we look at some of the numbers, you know, and actually since this report that you're reading from came out, we've done two additional reports that look at this particular trend more deeply, because to me it's so central and it's so disturbing. And so what we found is that belief that God exists, not necessarily the God of the Bible, but just any kind of deity or supreme being or supernatural power, that's dropped from 93% back in 1995 to closer to 60% today. And then if we look at how many people in America believe that the God of the Bible exists, that was 73% back in 1995. That's dropped to just 40% today. So you can see these things are changing very rapidly. They're changing in the direction of people saying, I've got to take control of my own life. There is no God that I can wait on or rely upon or perhaps even believe exists. And when we talk about God in our culture, and this is important for Christians to understand, when people use the word God, they're not necessarily, in fact, in most cases, they are not talking about the God of the Bible. What they're basically talking about is themselves or maybe some other gods that are out there, because we found that there are at least 17 gods that literally millions of Americans believe in. And what we're trying to do is find a God or create a God, i.e. ourselves, that's going to be more accepting of who we are and how we choose to act, less demanding, and is going to bring us what we think life is all about, which is happiness, pleasure, and comfort.
Well, you know, that's when you look at when you interact with people, to me, it's almost more understanding from a logical perspective. Once again, not spiritually necessarily, but logically, it makes more sense for people to just flat out reject God and say that they either don't believe in God, or maybe God does exist, but I don't want to follow his standards and his precepts. But then to have people who maybe claim the name of Christ, but then twist scripture to their liking, it's just very kind of frustrating from a biblical perspective to have people kind of halfway in and halfway out when it comes to Christianity and biblical teachings. But that's what we're dealing with today, is in many regards a twisting of the scripture. We see that with some of the mainline denominations that's playing out in America today. Another thing I wanted to talk about, at least this segment, we're kind of going through these 12 trends that Dr. George Barna and the Cultural Research Center have put out as of late January, trends that are shaping American faith and culture in this year, 2025. But one of them is organized Christianity, and the subject matter here is organized Christianity takes a hit, and you get into the number of Christian churches in America and the number of full-time pastors. I know personally this is a major problem, just hearing anecdotally from churches that are searching for full-time pastors. The average wait time is roughly 2 to 3 years or more to find a full-time pastor to replace some of these that are retiring or moving on. Talk a little bit about that problem.
Yeah, I mean, those are two big things that we're seeing happening. First, we've got a lot of churches that are actually closing. There's not enough interest, there's not enough money, and perhaps there's not the personnel that they need to keep the church going. And so a lot of churches, and they're not all small churches, by the way, but certainly many of them are. So you've got more churches closing, and at the same time, we've got the issue that you were alluding to, which is that we have fewer individuals who want to be pastors, fewer individuals who are being trained as pastors, fewer individuals that churches seeking a pastor want to hire. Partly that's because of theological perspectives. We find that with the younger generation of individuals, which of course are typically those who wind up going to seminary, they're coming in with theological perspectives that are less and less biblical. And because they don't trust authority figures and institutions as part of their tribal culture, their generational culture, they don't necessarily believe what their seminary professors would be teaching them. But then when we look at seminaries, we also find that we've got fewer seminary professors that are actually full-blown believers in the Bible and will teach it the way it's written. They're putting a lot of their personal interpretations in their cultural interpretations. So the whole ordeal has really become a mess. But the bottom line is we've got fewer people going to fewer churches that have fewer pastors. And so there is going to be a reshaping of the spiritual culture and landscape in America.
Yeah, and on that note, just in passing before we continue on with Dr. George Barna, I just want to challenge and encourage our listening audience because we cover some of these cultural trends and these biblical trends or these trends in Christianity. And you might ask yourself, what can I do about that, right? How can I impact or change that trend? Let me just encourage you, those that do go to a solid Bible-believing church with a pastor that believes in the inerrancy of Scripture, the authority of the Bible, please, I want to encourage you to be an encouragement to your pastor. Look, pastors deal with all kinds of stuff. They wear multiple hats. And in today's world, we just need congregants that will encourage and uplift and help their pastor in any way necessary. So I just want to put out that challenge for our listening audience. It's really difficult to find good pastors, and when you do, do everything that you can to help them, to support them, to encourage them, to make their job easier and help them be able to focus on the main thing. Dr. George Barna, moving on, we've got about 4 or 5 minutes left in this segment. The last thing on this trends in Christianity, and then a little bit in the next segment, we'll talk about some of these cultural trends. But the last one is, you call it signs of backbone, and you talk about how President Trump coming back into the White House might encourage and kind of bolster some believers to have a little more courage in the public square. Break that down for us.
Well, actually, this is as much about pastors and other church leaders as it is about congregants. What we know is in the last election, as we did all of our studies related to the election, what we found is that a huge proportion of pastors and Christian churches didn't lift a finger related to the election. Pastors didn't teach about the issues that were being discussed in the political campaigns. They didn't register voters. There were a lot of things they could have done. They chose not to. And there were a lot of reasons that they gave us for why they took that stance. Some of it was that they feared that the government would clamp down on them. You know, the alleged Johnson Amendment, where, you know, supposedly if you talk from the pulpit about political things, the government will rush in and close you down. They've never done that, but nevertheless, a lot of pastors use that as an excuse. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was real for them. Many other pastors said they just didn't feel that they should dirty their church by discussing politics. Other pastors told us, you know, even if I wanted to discuss it, I don't feel sufficiently educated on these issues to add value to where my people are at today, so I've just chosen to stay silent on it. And what we saw, what we're seeing now after the election, is that more and more of the biblically conservative pastors are saying, you know what, maybe now's the time for us to start doing some of this. We've got Mr. Trump in office. Maybe he'll give us some political cover. And, of course, as you've talked about on air, there is the move to get rid of the Johnson Amendment. Mr. Trump is behind that. But even beyond that, many conservative pastors now are saying, you know what, we need to encourage our people to get out there to vote biblically. But in order to do that, they need to be able to think biblically. And that's where I, as a pastor, that's where we as a church come in, is to help our congregation understand what does the Bible say about congregation? What does it say about economics? What does it say about crime? What does it say about family and abortion and homosexuality? All these kind of things. Maybe I need to be more bold in teaching and preaching about those kind of things. So, you know, that's an encouraging thing to see that. Bottom line here is that we want Christians to understand that voting is not an option. Mm. It's a stewardship responsibility, biblically speaking.
Yeah.
And so you've got to be prepared. You've got to do your homework. You've got to make the commitment to get engaged in the process of talking to your friends about what you believe, why you believe it, how it relates to the election, encouraging your friends to vote, but to vote biblically. And so this may be a really good starting point. There may be an ignition that's been triggered by the election of President Trump to get churches and their people more engaged in the process.
Yeah, absolutely. This, folks, many of you are aware of this, but there's a deep hunger out there for biblical truth on the issues of our day from Scripture. People want pastors to speak about the issues of our day that are biblical issues. What does the Bible say about human life? What does the Bible say about marriage? What does the Bible say about human sexuality? What, as Dr. George Barna said, what does the Bible say about economics, about capitalism? All of this stuff needs to be talked about, not because politicians are talking about it, but because it's in the Bible. And in order to live godly lives, we need to be well-rounded in our faith and teach the whole counsel of God. We've been having Dr. George Barna on with us. He's going to stick around for a few more minutes in the next segment to wrap up this 2025 trends report put out by the Cultural Research Center over at Arizona Christian University. So stick around. Dr. George Barna joins us now. We'll be back in a few minutes.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you. As a reminder, if you want to subscribe to the show, to the podcast, you can just type in the name of the program, At the Core, in your podcast library and click the subscribe button, and the show will be queued up in your library each and every day. You can also download the AFR app for free in your app store, the American Family Radio app that has both a live option and the podcasting option there in the AFR app. So a lot of ways to keep up with the program, and we appreciate you joining us today. We have with us on the line Dr. George Barna with the Cultural Research Center over at Arizona Christian University, and we're going over this latest report put out within the past few weeks about trends, 2025 trends, both in faith and the church, and then also cultural trends as well. Dr. Barna, let's jump back into this. When we move to what you call likely cultural trends, there's several very interesting topics here. The first one is mental health issues escalate. And the reason I find this interesting is because despite, you know, an increased quality of life over the past a century or so in America, lots of innovation in technology and medicine and the economy, Americans seem to be as unhappy as they've ever been. And this gets into mental health issues with antidepressant prescriptions at an all-time high. Just a lot of negative headlines there. But break down this mental health crisis that you cover in part of this report.
Well, as we look at all the data, I mean, what we're finding is that there's been a significant rise that started over a decade ago, and it continues to escalate in things like anxiety and depression and fearful thoughts, suicide attempts. All of that is escalating. As we've been trying to figure out why, there are a number of different reasons. One of the most interesting of those reasons to me has to do with people's worldview. When you go back to what we started my segment of your program talking about today, which was people reshaping God into their own image, I tell you what, Walker, nothing will give me greater fear than me believing that I'm in charge of my world. You know, I mean, you take the God of the Bible out of the equation and you put me on the throne. It's like, holy moly, I'm fearful now.
Yeah.
So, it's no doubt in my mind. Of course, we're going to be experiencing greater fear and anxiety, maybe even suicidal thoughts, when you take God out of the equation, when everything's up for grabs, when it's every person out for themselves. You know, it's only the strong will survive. And that's kind of the mindset of a lot of people. Now, where does that come from? It comes from their worldview. Everybody's got a worldview. Everybody makes their decisions based on their worldview. But what we know is in America today, only 4% of adults have a biblical worldview. And that has been on the decrease now for a couple of decades. We're in a place where we know that people's worldview is by and large developed by the age of 13. And when we look at our preteens and even our teenagers, what we see is 1% of less of each of those groups currently has a biblical worldview. So it looks like it's going to continue dropping. And what that means is that our mental health challenges are going to continue to escalate. Are prescription drugs the solution? For some people, yes, but for millions of Americans, absolutely not. You could take every pill that's available, and it's not going to help you when you're dealing with a bad worldview, or maybe you're dealing with loneliness. You haven't figured out how to make friends. You haven't figured out how to belong to a community of like-minded people who will accept you, for who God made you to be. That's another big issue that we find coming out of this, where people are having smaller circles of friends. Those friends in those circles are transitioning in and out of the circles at a rapid rate. So there's no predictability, no stability in terms of your relational life. And, so we turn to physical self-enhancements, you know, beauty products, vitamins, workouts, diets, all that stuff, and maybe other mental support regimens. But that's really not going to do the trick. So I think, again, we're at a place where it would do us well to rethink our whole approach to mental health issues in America. It's becoming just as big, if not bigger, an issue as all the physical health issues that we've been paying attention to for decades now.
Yeah, absolutely. Last one that I want to get your thoughts on. This one kind of, I'm not going to say it surprised me, but it was interesting to see in one of the last likely trends that you're kind of projecting into the future that's going to be an issue is that public schools will suffer, talking about the financial well-being of the public school sector, are the public school, part of government, the number of students enrolling. This was interesting, and COVID showed a lot, right? We had the Virginia School Board trend news story for months about Northern Virginia and getting kind of Marxist out of the school boards. So talk about that, about public school suffering. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, there are actually a lot of things happening. This is a very dynamic area for change right now, Walker, where what you've got is a lot of parents being woken up because of COVID, because of having to pay attention to what their student was doing, because their school was taking place online, so parents could be there. Parents were expected to be part of the process of educating their students during that time period, and they recognized the indoctrination that was going on and the nature of that indoctrination. They didn't like it a bit. So you've had a downturn, significant downturn, in public school enrollment over the last 4 or 5 years. But at the same time, what you have also is an inadequate number of teachers for public schools. Most kids that are coming out of college are deciding they don't want to be teachers. That's not a profession that intrigues them, partly because they know what they were like as students when they were in public schools. They're thinking, man, I wouldn't want to face me every day. And so they're going for other jobs that perhaps pay more, give them more freedom. But we also find that that's resulting in relaxed requirements for new teachers coming into public schools, which only serves to undermine the quality of public school education, which continues that whole cycle of parents then being dissatisfied with what they're getting from the public schools. You look at the test scores of our students, and President Trump, of course, has made a big deal about this. It's one of the reasons why they're closing down a large part, if not the entire, Department of Education. And, of course, billions and billions of dollars that have been wasted allegedly on public education are no longer going to be available to public schools. And so that's going to facilitate the decline of those schools to some extent. Probably won't have as big an impact as many people have feared, because a lot of that money wasn't actually getting to public schools. It was being given to other kinds of extracurricular programs. So you've got all of this, and what's happening? More people are homeschooling. More people are enrolling their students in Christian schools. And so it's radically reshaping the educational landscape in America today.
Dr. George Barna has been our guest for the last two segments, and we've been covering this 12 Trends report that was put out by the Cultural Research Center over at Arizona Christian University. Dr. Barna, very interesting topics, very fascinating subjects. As always, we appreciate you coming on AFR and American Family News and all of our various outfits to talk about your work. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Walker. Appreciate what you and AFR are doing.
Thanks much. That's Dr. George Barna. And if you want to check out their work, you can simply type in the Cultural Research Center or go to Arizona Christian University website and read more about their work. And this is a pretty fascinating report. And I really couldn't disagree with any of it. I do see a lot of this, even some of the projected trends. I do see them coming to fruition in the next few years. One thing I wanted to mention, this report just broke as I've had Dr. Barna on, which we'll see where this goes. But this is from Charles Gasparino, and he is a Fox Business course senior correspondent. But this kind of goes into the economics category. This report says people close, this is breaking, by the way, in the last, let's see, a couple hours. People close to the White House believe that President Biden increased federal spending by as much as $300 billion in his final months of his presidency to juice the economy, this is his words, and markets to help Kamala Harris get elected. That, combined with the rolling over of short-term debt in order to not force rates on the all-important 10-year note to spike higher, has left a balance sheet mess of epic proportions. They say, talking about the White House, that this spending spree provides an insight into the mountain of debt and deficits that Trump must start to eliminate. And he says that that story is developing, hopefully from Fox Business, that we'll be able to bring that to you. But Bobby, there's no telling what all went on behind the scenes in the final months of the Biden presidency that just set President Trump up with a disaster to deal with on multiple levels.
Yeah, and the more they dig into it, they being DOGE and whatever special counsels and committees and so forth, put the winnowing fork to it. Again, as we've been talking about, it's just the tip of the iceberg. And I think something that people should know is Charlie Gasparino, this Fox business analyst, has been around a very long time.
Yeah.
He is not particularly a big fan of Trump, so it's not like he's trying to play partisan politics here. So,
good point.
Typically, what Charlie has to say, people typically sit up and take notice.
Yeah, absolutely. This, folks, this, as I've said, I sound like a broken record sometimes. We didn't get inflation because of interest rates. Okay, we didn't get inflation because of low interest rates. And some people may disagree with me. And I'm not a fan of 0-1% interest rates. I think that's artificially low. I think that's I don't think that's healthy for the market. But the low rates didn't cause the inflation. All right, the $7 trillion in new monies that was printed during COVID, that caused inflation. All right, that's a fact. So, and so the reason I say that is because, you know, the Fed's like, oh, we can't lower rates because we're gonna cause inflation to spike back up, or we can't lower rates until we defeat inflation. Well, what this is gonna show you, what Trump is doing, will show you that it wasn't interest rates that had the effect on inflation. It was the government spending. It was the government spending combined with the neck-gripping regulatory environment that Biden was operating under that brought us the inflationary environment, all right? Because and the reason I can say that is because the Fed hasn't touched rates since Trump's been in office. They kept them flat. The Fed hasn't touched rates, and inflation's coming down, okay? Inflation's coming down, and they haven't touched rates since he's been in the Oval Office. So President Trump's deregulatory policies and lower deficit policies in spending is what is going to bring down inflation.
Exactly.
So, Bobby, the when are we going to learn that the Fed doesn't control inflation?
Exactly, or much of anything else. And I'm still with a jaundiced eye. I'm still looking forward to when they crack the seal on Fort Knox and see what.
How much gold's in there?
Or not.
If any. Yeah, I wish, Bobby, they would just find a good place to put rates and just leave them there.
Yeah, and I think that day is coming.
I don't know whether it's 4%, 5%, whatever.
Yeah, it's somewhere in there, in that sweet spot. Yeah,
sure. But the inflation is so a Congress White House thing. Like, whether it's high inflation or low inflation, it's so controlled by government spending and government policy that there's a strong case that the Fed just doesn't need to be around.
Correct.
I mean, their so-called dual mandate, they've never been able to balance
it. No.
They're either breaking one thing while trying to fix the other, or fixing one thing while breaking the other, right?
Yep.
Because their dual mandate, for those who don't know, you need to read up on this stuff.
For sure.
You need to know what's going on. Why on earth do we have the Federal Reserve? Their so-called dual mandate is maximum employment and price stability, or low inflation. Low inflation with maximum employment. And it seems like every time we get one or the other really well, the other one breaks.
Yeah, the balance is never really truly there. So
right. It's just back and forth.
Yeah. So why don't you just let the market do what it does and let it balance everything?
100%. 100%. That would be what many people, that's how many people feel at this point, to let the market just take care of itself and not be putting your thumb on the scale one way or the other when it comes to employment and interest rates. So that's mine and Bobby's two cents.
Amen.
We're not financial advisors, and oftentimes I get it wrong on my predictions. So take what I say with a grain of salt. We'll see you next time. Meet Kelsey. When she found out she was pregnant, she wasn't sure where to turn. But after meeting with the counselors at a preborn network clinic who loved and supported her, and after hearing her baby's heartbeat on a free ultrasound, she chose Life.
When a mother looks at her child through a sonogram, it does something to you. You know, I ended up deciding to keep my son, who is now 5 years old today. He's amazing. He brings absolute joy to my heart. I could not imagine life without him. Not only did they help me save his life, they saved my life.
By introducing a woman to her baby on ultrasound, a baby's chance of life doubles. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 on your phone and then say the keyword baby. Or you can donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.